Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran trial lawyer, Manny Barling. Manny, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and a beautiful day in Los Angeles. I hope the temperature's down in the Midwest, and our listeners are enjoying the weather a little more than they have in the last week.
Right. Hey, Manny, before we get on to the program, I know that you're a bit of a movie buff. And I read an article this morning that just made me giggle. Apparently, there is a remake of the cult classic from 1984, Red Dawn, slated to open for release in November. Wired magazine called it possibly the dumbest movie of all time. North Korea invading the U.S. I can't wait.
Well, that'll show you the length that lawyers and accountants in the industries will go to try and milk a successful movie for anything they can get. I went to the opening of Red Dawn in Los Angeles, written by a man I know, John Milius, who also directed it, who also wrote Wind and the Lion and a number of very famous movies. And it was opened up during the Olympics in 1984 to standing ovations of people screaming Wolverine, if you've seen the original, which was what the group of rebels called themselves, naming themselves after not only the animal but the Michigan football team.
Okay.
The original is a very, very interesting and good film. And by the way, John Milius specializes in these kind of films. He did an unusual film called Farewell to the King that's an extraordinarily interesting film about what happens if a guy goes into the jungle, not unlike the Apocalypse Now version of Heart of Darkness, and starts entrancing all the natives and becomes king. Common theme.
Okay, enough of movies. Do you have any particular ideas on aspects that we might explore on today's program?
I sure do, but first I want to dedicate this show to Chick Hearn, who died basically 10 years ago today. He was a Lakers announcer for more than 45 years. He's someone who taught me so much about basketball when I was a child and life through his word's eye view of the court. Chick called 3,338 consecutive games starting on November 21st, 1965. What many fans don't know is that Chick had not missed a game since the day he started in 1961 until bad weather grounded a small plane in Fayetteville, Arkansas, after calling a USC football game. Most people don't realize that it was also USC's football game, and in 72 he announced not only the Lakers championship at the USC National Championship. He literally missed one game in 42 years. If there's a heaven, Chick Hearn is calling all the sports events for God right now. But today we're going to return to one of our favorite topics, amateur sports versus professional sports, how the lines have crossed to a point where amateurism has been extinguished by greed. It's rare that you hear the word sports mentioned in a sentence without the word money in a long, long time. College basketball now is a financial extravaganza called March Madness. College football is now commercials and parties, timed to maximize profits for the BCS championship game. Sometimes I wonder if there's a game on the TV. The NBA and Mark Cuban are considering a world basketball championship modeled after World Cup soccer because many owners think the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is making too much money off their pro players under contract in the NBA. And track athletes have long ago become professionals, receiving entry fees and large prizes for winning meets and setting world records. Professional tennis players are competing for gold medals just weeks after competing for Wimbledon titles. And you saw today with one of the sisters winning, or yesterday won the Olympic gold medal after winning the Wimbledon title, 3 weeks ago. So we're going to discuss a wide variety of topics that sports amateurism and professionalism raise to our panel. Some of it's personal, some of it's just looking back at business, and We're going to go to John Perry, a man who believes in the purity of amateur sports, but is a devotee of the history of baseball. John brings a variety of viewpoints to the table on money and sports. John, are you all ready to dig in today?
I'm ready, Manny, and it's good to be with you guys today, especially you, Simon. I'd say I'd missed you, but that would be the equivalent of the economy's getting better.
Yes, and I don't want to spark rumors, but TMC says that Simon and John have started dating. But anyway, Sam, we welcome Sam Maffey, a man who always reminds me of the purity of Division II and Division III sports, particularly football, where athletes play for titles in front of small crowds in the name of championships, not commercials and perks to the athletic department and donors. And Sam, we're going to come back to that, and we're going to expect you to tell everybody the difference between commercial Division I sports and the sanctity of the other levels of sports. And my co-host, Simon Barrett, he would like to see professional players like the NBA players banned from the Olympics because they beat up on a poor little Nigeria team by 80. And Peter, once again, Peter Haven, who's probably the most balanced viewpoint of all of us. Peter, we'll have to keep us on a straight line today, Peter.
I'm going to do everything in my pen to get you on a crooked line. That's the best listening.
Well, good. And me, well, I'm a rabid dog about the changes in sports. At one time, the Olympics was about the moment. And that live moment when all Americans are glued to the set in anticipation of a race. And an athlete does something so extraordinary that you leap off of your couch and scream, much like we all did for the Miracle on Ice in 1980 Olympics. And Dave Waddle throwing his golf cap on the way to surprising the field and a photo finish of the 800-meter race in the 72 Olympics. He won that by 0.03 seconds. Or Billy Mills coming out of nowhere to shock the world in the 68 Olympics in Mexico to become the first American Indian since Jim Thorpe to win a major event. The question now is, do I still believe in miracles? The answer is no, because miracles don't look like miracles on tape delay. Thanks to executives and advertising people at NBC, you'll not be experiencing any of that anymore. So much has been said about tape-delayed showings of the Olympics, but I'd like our panel to consider this observation. Would you watch the Super Bowl if it were tape-delayed and you could see the results, including statistics on the bottom line of every sports channel in America for 6 hours before and during the game? Peter, how much of the tape delay broadcast have you watched in this year's Olympics?
I have not. I've barely watched probably an hour of what I understand to be live competition. Everything that I watch is highlights or tape delay. I doubt it's even a half an hour. I really have not observed any of these events live at all. It's almost all tape delays and highlights.
Sam, how about you? Have you been able to get past the tape delays and watch them?
I could barely get past the opening ceremonies. I still don't know what I was watching when that was starting. I don't know. It was kicking off the Olympics. That was the craziest opening ceremonies I'd ever seen, tape delay or live. No, I have not watched anything that's been live. It's been, when I've watched it, it has been tape delayed.
John, I know you've been working extraordinarily hard the last couple weeks, because I'm making sure you're working extraordinarily hard. Have you been able to squeeze in any Olympic time?
No, I haven't, Manny. A lot of the attraction in the Olympics was lost to me years ago, essentially when the Cold War ended, because I always looked at it as our guys were the underdogs, the amateurs against the professionals subsidized by the state.
John, if you're on a speakerphone, you're going to have to get off it, because if I'm struggling hearing you, then I'm sure our audience is.
All right, Manny, real quick. A lot of the attraction in Olympics was lost to me, I think, when the Cold War ended, because I looked at it like our underdog guys, the amateurs, were vying against the professionals from the Eastern Bloc states who were subsidized by the state. And it was kind of like it appealed to my pride as an American, and I think a lot of that's lost now. And a lot of the luster for me, I wouldn't even watch the stuff if it was live, because a lot of the sports are esoteric that I have absolutely zero interest in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean like turning on the TV this morning to see what maybe there's something worth watching, and they had female water polo? And I can tell you, as an American sports buff, I have never turned on my TV in America and seen a women's water polo. Is anyone else?
Well, actually, I'm waiting for the synchronized women's water polo.
Well, no, I've never seen water polo before, and I woke up and watched the same thing this morning briefly. I think that was China and Australia. But I heard there was quite an interesting event with women's water polo the other day that did unfold live, and I didn't get to see it.
Oh, yeah, the booby, booby story.
The Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction. I missed it, and I tried to see it again, and all I got was, censored pictures or something. But there you go. That's what happens when they're showing this in the midnight hours.
I bet her, whoever the player was happy about it. But, I think that maybe that's why they don't show NC2A women's water polo. And to be perfectly honest with you, I wasn't even aware they had NC2A women's polo. Were you, Peter?
No, but I got an even greater shock today when I saw men's field hockey being played.
Wow.
There is nothing wrong with field hockey.
What about badminton?
Okay, badminton. I mean, that's a good story there. I mean, what was it? 8 athletes got turfed because that they were throwing matches. They'd already qualified. So, if they lost a few games, it would give them weaker teams to face in the next round.
That sounds like something sanctioned by some type of country. And I forgot which one. I thought it was the Korea and China and some of those people where you could understand some undue pressure from their government. But please.
Yeah.
That was a crazy thing, and it was at least one or two Korean teams and one or two Chinese teams, I forget. But, that's a problem with the way the rules and the tournament is set up. These people had an incentive not to win certain games so that they could get a better seed in the championship rounds. And I thought there was a bit of an overreaction to that, but I guess they didn't make it look very good. They were pretty obvious about it.
Manny, let me ask you, too. You've been watching the Olympics longer than me. Don't you think the integrity of the games have been compromised, not because of corporate greed, but simply because of blood doping and steroids? And remember the East Germans? I mean, they could bench press more than me, the women.
Oh, yeah.
And just to remain competitive, you had the blood dope. And even the results now are questionable because look at Lance Armstrong. You never know who's clean and who's not. It becomes very, very cynical.
Uh-huh.
I think that's another part of it.
I remember, did you ever see a movie called Top Secret?
No.
Top Secret, there was a classic done by the guys who did Airplane. So you can imagine the tempo of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a scene in there where our hero has now arrived behind the curtain, the Iron Curtain for the games, and they introduce the East German swimming team, and it's a bunch of male weightlifters wearing blonde wigs, all look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in swimming outfits.
Mm-hmm.
It's a parody on the dishonesty of the East German team. And there wasn't a time in my youth that I didn't think that they were doping and the Eastern Bloc teams. And yet we fought them to a standstill despite all their consumption of illegal drugs. And go ahead, Simon.
All right. This is where I start to get grumpy. I mean, it was obvious that the Eastern Bloc were not playing by the rules. The Russian hockey team, they just happened to all be in the Red Army.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a big coincidence.
That was one of my favorites, too.
Simon, the name of their team was the Red Army team.
Right. I don't see that two wrongs make a right. Yeah, so here we are, you know, we're now fielding some of the very best NBA players, so we can whip up on Nigeria. You know, well, I hope they feel really damn proud of themselves.
Well, that's not true at all. We're playing NBA players because we couldn't get the rest of the world to stop doing what they were doing, which was playing professionals who were coincidentally playing in the in America in the NBA. I mean, it got to a point where, as John has pointed out, it was such a joke it was hard for me to watch. Except, John, I agree with you. There was a sense of jingoism in my youth. I used to go to the Coliseum Relays in Los Angeles in the old days when we would have an annual meet with the Soviet Union, and people would show up and act as if it were a, you know, a world crisis playing.
Right. It was entertaining.
And entertaining because of the level of commitment. And there's nothing to try. I'll give an example. I'm a big Laker fan. I don't think it's any secret the Lakers have a very long and heated rivalry with the Boston Celtics. And thank goodness, because those games wouldn't be as much fun without that heated rivalry, John. Right, John?
Right, and it was a similar pitch back during the Cold War. That's what I was saying.
Uh-huh. And as far as beating up on Nigeria, you know, it would help if Nigeria did not show up for the game with their autograph books, dying to get autographs from the NBA players and played some basketball, because quite frequently those guys are just so locked into the game going, oh, my God, look at these guys, that they forget they should be playing in the game. No, I'm serious about it. And if you watch it, I remember the Dream Team in Barcelona in 92, and the minute the game was over, people would go running to them going, oh, my goodness, can I get your autograph? And you kind of go, guys, isn't there a game you're playing?
Okay. I'm going to switch allegiance here, and I'm going to rely on Sam to come to my rescue. Sam, professionals have no place in the Olympics.
They should either should be all amateurs, or let anything go. Doping, steroids, or whatnot. Everyone's looking the other way. We all know they're looking the other way. They're professional athletes 24/7. Manny, you opened up with Wimbledon, okay? The people who just won in Wimbledon, they make oodles of money, and now they could have a gold medal. You know, what did LeBron? They had the world stage. Let some real amateurs have the world stage across the world. More teams, more people would be able to participate. I call him LeBum James, but does LeBum have to? What does he have to prove at the world level? Need another gold medal? I mean, he makes $80 million a year. He's been on the world stage, called winning the world championship. And, you know, I just think, look at all the college kids who would never get a chance to do that, or who will never play in the NBA, or if they do play in the NBA, to be the 12th person on a team. It's totally taken away. The last 20 years, I've got less and less interested in the Olympics for, one, the professionals and all the sports. There's just nonstop sports, 24/7. And I used to be a great fanatic sports. I'm not anymore. It's just too much of it. Just like that movie you talked about, a remake of Red Dawn. What's next? A remake of Raise the Titanic? I mean, it's getting ridiculous. It's the same old.
But the Titanic film was the third remake. The one that won the Academy Award was the third remake, and I actually like the one with Clifton Webb in the 50s, if anyone's a movie buff.
Well, no, you said the Raise the Titanic, that was terrible.
Oh, that's Cleve Cussler's book. Right.
That's the one they're going to make a remake of it because of the success of Cameron's film and all that stuff. But, you know, I just really think, if you had the joke around town here is if you had Nigeria in 90, you lost. And, that's pathetic. You know, and then you talk about what you guys are talking about, you and John, about, nationalism. The Olympics used to be all about nationalism. I think the biggest was Lake Placid. You know, I remember that. I was in college when that happened. Mm-hmm. And I got all caught up in that hoopla, and it was exciting that amateur hockey players beat the professional Russian team or the Eastern Bloc.
Oh, yeah.
That used to happen. And we all got caught up in that, and it was a feel-good story. Probably You know, it was a good article, and that was good. But now, when I'm seeing people waving the American flag because the United States basketball team just beat Nigeria, 7,000 to 52, it's embarrassing. It really is.
So let me ask you a question then. How did you feel about all those Roman citizens who were rooting for the Lions? Did you think that was fair?
Oh, you're going to compare them? I think that was
believe me, putting Nigeria up against an NBA team is about as close an analogy as you can get on. You get to walk away alive.
I agree. And I also said, you bring up a very valid point. You know, Spain shouldn't have the Gasol brothers, if I'm pronouncing the names right. No one, if you're playing the NBA, you're already one of the best of the best. Great, good for you. You earned it. You're a great athlete. You're in all that stuff. You're making oodles of money. You let other people have a chance at it. That's all I'm saying. And I think it'd be more interesting for us at home. That's just my take.
I just knew that Sam would come to my rescue.
God knows you need it.
God, that was pretty desperate of you, actually, Simon. Let me remind everybody of a sad fact in history. Jim Thorpe, one of the greatest athletes in the history of the world, had his medals taken away because he was starving in college when he played for Carlisle, and he actually played in one or two semi-pro professional baseball games during the summer to help feed himself. For that, he was disqualified as an Olympian, as compared to what goes on now. And when you put it in that kind of framework, it's really even more disturbing to me.
Yes. Didn't they restore his medals at some point, Manny?
I'm not sure they did. I don't recall them restoring them.
I thought there was some – I remember when it came up, there was some petition that someone started, some of his
– Yeah, they did, fairly recently, within the last 10
years.
Yeah,
but I don't think they've been restored.
Okay, I don't know. I know that people do, and they should be, and I agree with you 100% about that. And I just can't, you know, the fact it's on tape delay, I'm really happy because I'm not watching it. You know, it's my own little problem. And the IOC and the big money that's involved, that opening ceremony, I mean, my jaw dropped because what did that have to do with the Olympics? I couldn't believe it.
And I want to come back to the professionalism that you brought up, too, before we move into another area. I had a dear friend named Mac Robinson, who is the older brother of Jackie Robinson, the legendary Jackie Robinson. And Mac told me a lot about the 1936 Olympics. He represented the United States. He actually finished right behind Jesse Owens in the races. And one of his complaints was because Jesse Owens had become such a well-known figure that he was favored. So what happened is he was given new shoes to run in, where Mac, who wasn't on the good list, basically was given no shoes. So he had a hand-me-down pair of shoes when he ran in the Olympics. And at the same time, the German team showed up, and they had all brand new everything. They all were being followed around by personal trainers, et cetera. And he said that was his first experience of what he considered to be professional athletes in the Olympics. And he told me that story because I was complaining about the 68 Olympics and a lot of the events going on. And he said, oh, no, that happened all the time. So this is not necessarily a new issue in our country.
Right. Peter's been very quiet.
Well, I was trying to gauge if anybody was in favor of the so-called professionalism of Olympics.
I am, Peter.
I actually don't have a problem with it. I don't mind the professionalism at all. In fact, I kind of like it. I think one of the things it does is, in basketball, for example, by putting our best people on the court, we help make the world of basketball competition better. After the Dream Team made its debut back in 92, international basketball got better.
Right.
And these teams improved greatly. They started producing NBA-quality stars. And there was a great exchange of coaches and information, and the world got better. And, you know, for every Nigerian rout, there's also a Lithuanian cliffhanger. I mean, we beat the Lithuanians by 5 points the other night. And they have two or three NBA players on their roster. So I actually kind of like it. I think if I had to watch amateurs, I would just say, well, what's an amateur anyway? That's the second question, because it seems to me that every one of these people all over the world, in whatever sport they're in, they're making money on their athletic success. Michael Phelps has been hawking Subway sandwiches and Speedos for the last 4 years, as far as I can tell. And I presume that in every country that these athletes go home to, they have some measure of sponsorship or advertisement or something. And if it's just about professional leagues, I lived in Australia for a year, and they had a professional basketball league in Australia. And, they had quotas about, where people could come from. But I don't think those guys made a lot of money. I think they wanted to be good basketball players. And I think it would just be a shame to say professional athletes from one league can't play, but professional athletes from another league can. I just don't think there's any way to really practically implement any of these standards on so-called professionalism.
Oh, okay. You make an incredibly valid point. You'll notice, though, that the London Olympics don't, for example, have Australian rules football.
What a shame. I love them.
Well, that's so popular all over the world, I don't know why they don't have it.
I watch it.
But I love Aussie rules football. I really do.
So do I.
I don't know why some sports are not in the Olympics than others. I played lacrosse for 20-plus years, and I think lacrosse is close to being a world sport, and it may be in the Olympics someday. But, there's lots of sports that claim that they have a world following and they want to be in the Olympics. Maybe they will someday, maybe they won't. I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing some Aussie rules, but I just don't know what the world following would be.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because a typical example is because of the Olympics in the U.S., they gave baseball a try for a number of years. It really did not work well within the Olympic scenario, but it did cause the World Champion Games to be created.
Which are great.
And by the way, I support professionalism. I was being the devil's advocate because I've had this discussion off and on with Simon. But I, like you, am concerned about a level field. The problem I have sometimes with this is it has become too kind of a laissez-faire lack of competitive nature. And then throw in my illustration that you wouldn't watch the Super Bowl on tape delay, and it starts to come into perspective, because the Olympics were always about the moment. One of my dear friends was also Andy Sedaris, who produced the Olympics for years and won an Emmy for the Munich Olympics. I introduced Simon to his widow, also a friend of mine, and we interviewed her about, it seems like a year and a half ago. Am I about right, Simon, on the show?
Yeah, that's about right. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Arlene talked a lot about it. And I can remember sitting at all places, strange places, and Costa Rica with Andy about 4 or 5 years ago before he died of cancer, discussing the Olympics and how it was so important when they did the Olympics, particularly ABC, to catch that moment and to give the feeling to people who watched the Olympics that they were there. And that's where I think NBC has failed the most. They're treating this sort of like one of their Entertainment Tonight type shows, Oh, we've got this product, and guess what? We'll just string it out, and we'll make it a soapy thing. And then they show these, supposed in-stories about athletes, and most of the stories to us sports fans are stale. Wouldn't you agree, John? Have you seen some of these at all?
Yeah, of course, Manny. I'd like to just to amplify Peter's comments real quick. And Simon, I'd like you to think about this. You're promoting penalizing excellence. And I know that's the prevailing attitude in our country today, but to me, that's promoting mediocrity. just because other countries aren't up to our level in certain sports. That's no reason. I want to see the best athletes in the world, not someone, oh, he's too good to play. He's disqualified. I don't like that attitude. And, Peter, that was a very good point about other countries catching up to us in the world, because we are sending our best players, and that's a level for them to strive to compete, rather than sending our college guys, which, to be honest, I enjoyed watching those games better because they were competitive. But they're not the best athletes in the world. They don't deserve to be there on their merit. And I certainly don't want to see John Thompson coaching them.
Yeah.
But I want to say also,
Manny,
I miss Howard Cosell. The guy, I miss a presence. An announcer is very important. And they don't really have those personalities now. They're
okay,
all like,
the
game's important.
Something.
I want to see someone with...
I want to say something. You guys are all talking about the best of the best and this and this, and that's great. And all these guys, they need more ego, like we all need holes in our heads and all that. But let's talk about an Olympic summer sport that used to be. I don't even know if they have it anymore. If they do, I haven't seen it, and I apologize if I sound ignorant. Whatever happened to world boxing?
We just got clobbered as a nation.
And you saw people from all over the world, all those divisions, and they were all amateurs.
I could tell you that's very easy. Don King and Bob Arum.
Okay, that's a whole other issue. But a lot of but people used to fight that the amateurs, the ones that you don't want because they're only amateurs. They're not the best of the best. And who says they may not be the best of the best at some point in the world? Because when you're an amateur, you're an amateur. Then you can become a professional, and you may be the best of the best. I don't know. Right now, LeBron James is the greatest, okay, according to some people. Other people might say somebody else's. But there may be someone who starts out catches fire at the Olympics of their career, takes off and, you know, in the college, and all of a sudden they're just as good as LeBron James.
That happens all the time in boxing. Lots of great American boxers started off in the Olympics.
Right,
you know,
exactly. Ali.
Oscar De La Hoya and Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yep.
To name a few, I also remember a great Cuban boxer by the name of Teofilo Stevenson.
Right, and the Olympics ruined that because the Olympics promoted that, excuse me. They promoted that boxing throughout the world because you'd see people, you used to see the matches, and that was one of the more fun things to watch on ABC, and you're absolutely right, Howard Cosell, and ABC was great. And Jim, what was his name? Jim McKay was a great anchorman, just fabulous. The boxing, you would see people from all the Russians, the guy in Cuba you just mentioned, the Americans. I mean, the competition was incredible. And then the side stories they used to tell about the boxers and how they trained and how they, you know, a lot of them came from poverty. They were fighting to, you know, put food on the table. It was excellent. And I don't see that. You know, that to me was the Olympics, was real amateurs. And then then they made it. They won their gold medal. They got into real professionals, and then the cover was on Wheaties. And then they never saw them again in the Olympics 4 years later. Now I see the same people over and over.
Right. Wait a minute, Sam. I got to interrupt you. First of all, Teofilo Stevenson, who I consider professional as a Cuban, who did nothing else, was a member of the Cuban Army, fought in a number of Olympics and won three or four in a row while still being what I would consider a professional in Cuba.
No doubt.
I agree.
And, by the way, God rest his soul, he died recently. But when you look at the boxers, we fielded a complete team this year, and everybody thought it was going to be a very good team, and it turned out to be a pretty poor team. And the end result is you haven't seen much of them because I think we had six or seven lose in the first round this year, which seemed to be very upsetting to everybody.
One was eliminated.
All but one.
Boxing. Okay, that's a bad. That's how much I've not paid attention. And they're not getting to play because they're losing, which is that American nationalism thing again.
No. What happened, in my opinion, is, and I think it's pretty accurate, is basically NBC wanted to wait till they won some to then show it more. You know, from we're close to the end here, and champion the American fighters after the prelims, and then they started losing, and there was too late because they missed the boat on showing it. So the decision's, again, a poor decision made by NBC basically stopped everybody from seeing it. And that's what happened.
By the way,
and I'm gonna, you know, so Cuba won one medal every 4 years. Teofilo Stevenson, big whoop. So he's a professional. Ooh, I mean, come on.
Well, but it's still not a playing field level. Wait a minute. What happened to the level playing field?
I wonder, man, you three guys are gonna lead us to another war with your nationalism and America first, America first, us. Jeez.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who believe that,
and I agree with you.
Right, but you know, I like the Olympics. I like the idea behind the Olympics, and what I don't like is jingoism. You know, the Olympics should be about these young kids, you know, doing their best. Yeah, not. And absolutely not what we're getting right now.
So you think that we should stop keeping scores of Little League games because it might impair the children's growth?
I knew someone was going to say that.
Oh, Lord.
I could not resist it. I'm sorry, Sam.
Oh, I knew someone to say something like that.
You know?
I mean, Manny, it's a good job that... We live far apart, you know. Otherwise, I'd come over and slap you for that one.
You don't think I haven't heard mothers say that shit to me? Excuse me, that line to me. Come on, you don't think there are mothers out there who don't believe in what the Summerhill theories of? You know, John, you got to get quieter Snickers bars.
Right.
we're getting calls in from potato chip companies complaining, okay?
I'm available for endorsements, by the way.
And by the way, I almost sent you an article. I know if any of you saw this, but someone was caught smuggling crystal meth in Snickers bars, and they were arrested, a huge ring. My first inclination was to call John up and ask him whether he was doing crystal meth with his Snickers, and that's why he was so wired last week. But I did restrain myself, John.
Thanks, Manny. Hey, let me ask Simon something real quick. It sounds like you pine for the days of Avery Brundage, who made the NC2A look honest.
He was
the most corrupt Olympic official ever, and he ran the IOC for what, 50 years?
He was the worst.
Yeah. So you know, the those glory days you guys are talking about, they were just as corrupt as everything today. Remember that.
No, we're not talking about
talking about who led the IOC. Right, absolutely. They're corrupt from we all know what happened in Salt Lake City. That, you know, we all know. What we don't know is, you know, where the next Olympics are going to be held and how they're being bribed to have the Olympics there and this and that. We all know that goes on, and it went on when there were amateurs playing. But I think Simon and I are both on the stages. Let the professionals be professionals in their professional sports and their professional countries.
But, sir, you're penalizing excellence. Don't you want to see the best athletes in the world perform?
I see the best athletes when I watch the NFL football or NBA basketball or World Series baseball or whatever, or track and field. When the World Cup comes on, I see the best soccer players. The sporting events all the time.
But don't say it's the best athletes in the world.
You see them all the time. If I want to see things, I go online and see one. I can go see a track meet anywhere else. I mean, sports is ESPN.
So you're saying some people are just too good to compete.
To what?
Too good to compete. Too talented.
I think if the Olympics should go back to being total pure amateurs, because there's enough professional sports and sports leagues throughout the world that will, once these people, the amateurs become pros, they'll have a place to go to. Or they'll retire and go home and be on lifetime television or something, whatever.
But then what about countries who subsidize their athletes?
Our country subsidizes our athletes through the NBA. I mean,
well, then that's a pro.
What? The pros subsidize
then.
The athletes.
Like Manny said about the Red Army hockey team. They were the greatest team in the world. Except when the Broad Street Bullies beat them 4-1 in 1976, and they left the ice after 10 minutes because they were too tough.
I remember
that. We all know that was, you know, we all were fighting the Cold War through our sports team, which is pretty pathetic to look back at it. I mean, instead of fighting them on the war, I guess that the act was a good thing. Instead of killing each other, we were just playing each other in sports.
Right.
But countries that subsidize their athletes, again, so what? Nigeria wins one medal. Cuba wins one medal. They're not going to win that many medals compared to the athletes that come from the United States, Great Britain, China, and whatnot.
Oh, yes. And by the way, everybody's forgetting to mention good old China, who, tell me their athletes aren't purely professional.
Yeah, when did they get so good? I don't remember the Chinese being major players in the Olympics. I think they're going to win the medal count this year. It's amazing to me.
Right.
Obviously,
these amateur Chinese athletes are on a regiment. It's all of the sweet and sour pork bowls.
No, Simon, there are issues. There are a lot of people who believe that the Chinese, like these Germans, may well be cheating, but they're not able to show it. First of all, it's very hard for them to get over there and get sufficient testing to determine a variety of factors. The Chinese may well be ahead in the ability to manage those drugs, the same way East Berlin or East Germans were way ahead of the world in terms of their ability to handle those things in sports. So there are a lot of people that wonder. And you have to remember, in China, if you don't become an athlete, and of course if you're not successful as an athlete, then your life is pretty well done. So there's a certain amount of you succeed or you die in China that really is not dealt with as openly as it should be.
Remember those old movies when
the Russian didn't win the event, he was going to Siberia?
Right. But, here is the question that I have. Obviously, my concept of the Olympics isn't working. But, the whole amateur sports thing,
right.
Doesn't exist. So should we, or not we, but should the IOC... just open it up. Anyone can enter. Forget the drug testing. If you want steroids, growth hormone, whatever. Yeah, go
Who
for
let
it.
The dogs out? That's what they should do. They just let them out.
Right. That's me, unfortunately.
The only reservation I've had is looking at an incredible number of American athletes who have died as a result of these types of drugs, from Lyle Alzado down. One of my other close friends is Willie Gault, the former Chicago Bear and Olympian himself, and he devotes his life literally to helping his former members, because anyone who knows much about sports knows that Chicago Bear team from 1986 is suffering through horrendous losses of members of the team to a variety of different ailments. Dave Durison committed suicide and donated his brain to science.
Yep.
Some of it's drugs, some of it's concussions. But if you've known anyone who's taken too many steroids over a long period of time, even Schwarzenegger had a heart attack, which he probably should not have had at his age. I don't care what he says. You can attribute that to him taking steroids for 20 years. So there's a lot of health issues involved, and of course the bad example that children who are already consuming drugs of wide varieties need not also consume those at a young age to get an advantage to play college football, because that's one of the concerns too, right, gentlemen?
It happens in high school football around here, guys.
Oh, I bet, especially in Ohio. Oh, my God, high school football is almost as bad as it is in Alabama.
It is bad. I mean, my kids were exposed to it playing for the football team that they played for when they won state championship.
Yeah, it's expensive, isn't it?
It's incredible. So I go agree with Simon. Our idealistic, one of the few things I'm an idealistic in amateur sports Olympics, it's never going to happen. I realize that. It's a fun argument. But then I have to agree with him. Let the genie's out of the bottle. Let him dope up. Let them, that's what these people want to do, because it's going to mean more money for them and more prestige and more glory that they may not get in some other avenue of life. Then let it fly, because they're doing it anyway. Why hide it?
Well, so you know just the health concerns should be addressed.
Well, I mean, it's bad, but they're gonna do it, right? They're gonna find some way to do it, and maybe like you bring some really good points up about in East Germany. I never would, you know, I knew they looked like men, but I never even knew what the word doping was, or you know where they were in regards to getting their athletes to be performance enhanced drugs. And like you just brought up, wow, would the Chinese get good all of a sudden? Probably way ahead of us. So someone's always going to be ahead of the curb. So get rid of the curb. Let it fly. Those that want to take it will take it. Those that there may be some, you know, I'm sure there's instances where natural ability can beat out dope enhanced ability. I wouldn't know what exactly. I don't have an example for that. But the percentages would have to be that at some point, some natural athletes can beat the. With the God gift that they got as an athlete to beat somebody who's enhancing themselves.
So do you believe that if I start taking steroids that I could possibly be a better quarterback than Peyton Manning?
No, I don't, well, I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen you play football. But I don't know, but if that's your choice, go ahead. But
you're right, Sam. We would have to see that before we could answer that question.
So would I might add.
But the reality is,
I'd like to see a drop.
The whole bunch of us are going to come and watch.
I've never. The reality is, though, I've seen it with my own kids in high school. And they've been out of high school for 8 years or so. And other kids, and almost, you know, the peer pressure to do it. Now I look at some of these kids, when I do go to a high school football game, 10 years after my kids played, they're even bigger than my sons were. And my sons were pretty big. And some of their friends were really big. But these kids, and they are 24/7 training in the weight room, probably, you know, they have the diet, you know, the right diet down, this and that. And they're definitely taking performance enhancing drugs. They don't dope test in high school. So why wouldn't that? And you're right, Manny. What's it all for? Well, one, to win the state championship, bring prestige to your high school. Two, hopefully get a college scholarship, not to Penn State, but somewhere else.
Yep. And you see it all the time, and it's terrible. And you see it even more in the inner city, where the pressure to make it as an athlete is just so extreme. You know, to so many of these young men, they're ticket to get out of the ghetto, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there, and that's a difficult problem. But let's come back to the bigger picture again. What we have is a point in our lives and our evaluating sports, where sports now have become more of a commercial venture for the sole purpose of let's call it this, running ads. I mean, do you think that? Basically, NBC really cares about who wins these Olympics. Do you think they care about anything other than how much money their ad revenues are going to be? Does anybody feel they have any other legitimate interest in these games?
Oh, I think I'll just keep my mouth shut other than to say what they're doing is horrible. I mean, it's that they've commercialized the event to such an extent that their TV coverage is 24/7 advertising, and that they should actually have someone, you know, come on and say, "Oh, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to break into these important messages to show you 30 seconds of some boring sporting event that no one's ever heard of."
Are you talking about the Super Bowl now, or are you talking? What are you talking about? The Super Bowl is exactly that. And gentlemen, I went to the very first Super Bowl here in Los Angeles, and the ticket, by the way, was only like $15. So you can imagine the difference in that. And it was a normal football game with rather normal commercials. And, you know, it was, you know, a fairly well-played game at first. But the reality was there wasn't much to do about it. And we really enjoyed it. It was a great time. And then over a period of time, The next time I went to a Super Bowl game, it seemed like it was twice as long. And then I just said, I'm just not doing this anymore. I'm not going to any more of these games. It's ridiculous. And now we reach a point where the game's gone for 4 or 5 hours endlessly and without any kind of end. And people sit around and their whole time is spent grading commercials. Now, that's the problem in our country. So it's not only that sport. This is pervading every single sport that Americans watch. I don't know if anyone feels any differently about that.
Oh, I'm sure John does.
Well, just on principle, in good conscience, I disagree with Manny. But I thought that was
a pretty
good one. Is
that because the sun went up this morning?
Yeah, a lot of times the commercials are more entertaining than the games themselves. But I'm really not a fan of the Olympics anymore. I guess because of the diminished nationalism, like Sam mentioned, I don't have that spirit or interest anymore. But Manny and Simon, you guys remember, who pays for the games? Why do you get to watch them for free? Because of the corporate advertising. So you can't have it both ways. You want pay-per-view and no commercials, then that's going to negatively impact the poor, which you guys purport to support all the time. So there's always unintended consequences to the advertising. They pay for the games, and they're entitled to put it on.
Well,
John, wait a minute,
wait a minute, Simon. I can't let that go. You have to look at how much of this is on cable. So the very point that you're making is undermined by the fact that so much of this is now on cable, and the only thing that Americans see who cannot afford cable and DirecTV and all the various choices are these late-night selected highlights of whatever it is they determine they want to show highlights of. I mean, think about it. The public that you're pseudo-defending here don't really get to see anything of the games.
So aren't the major sports on NBC because they can generate the largest audience?
Indeed, but it's all about money. I mean, NBC couldn't give a damn about the Olympics.
Simon, that's very cynical.
Oh, yes, they do. That brings them lots of money. They do give a damn about them.
Right.
Having them, controlling them.
Simon, do you think it should be like the BBC and just complete nationalism and, you know, the poor little Brits? I mean, of course they're in it to make money. Come on, they have to bid for the contract and pay millions or billions of dollars. I don't know. And sure, there's remuneration, but how do you expect people not to promote that? But I don't understand who's doing their programming, because to me all their sports are just of little interest to me. But I don't make those decisions. But it's got to be money generated to pay the bills.
Manny, I do believe that John has just opened the door. And NBC, now, who might own NBC? Well, actually, they don't own them. They only have a 49% interest.
Yes, General Electric owns 49%. Vivendi purchased the other 51% because, frankly, NBC was losing money under the management of General Electric, which no surprise. But, I mean, you know, John and I have this discussion from time to time. John sees all these entities from CNN down as last bastion of liberal politics, et cetera, and supporting liberal causes. But the reality is most of these do not, and most of these, and again, we're going to get specifically over to the issue of NBC and even Disney, who owns ABC, are not the most liberal companies in the world. NBC basically owns some of about everything in this country. Every ad that you see, they in some way have some financial connection to. And that is one of the problems, again, John, is this cornering and misuse of advertising by those who have the ability to do it. And that's really where you're going with it, right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely.
Just took them a while to get there.
Yeah.
Oh, John, I like to give you a carrot before I bring the stick out.
Why don't you just whack him with a stick? He likes Sam better.
No, but this
is a problem right now, is that we have corporate interests. The corporate interests in our country, without any protections at all from basically what I would describe as antitrust rules, are effectively out of control. And this is an example where they take something of great common interest to all Americans and twist and turn it into their own unique version of profit. And yes, they have a right because they're paying for it, but we also have a situation where they're paying too much for it. Why? Because the IOC has become one of the greediest bodies in the world, and they're playing one country against the other in a form of jingoism. And I don't know if you see that, Peter, or your travels, too, that basically every time there's a bidding to see who gets the Olympics, it's who can give them the most money, who can make the biggest bribes, and who can offer them the greatest perks. Almost like college bowl games, right, guys?
Yeah, I agree.
Good, excellent analogy.
Yeah, I mean, college bowl games now have become so corrupt, and I won't even get into the fact that they're financing politics behind the back. But we have this problem in our country where nothing can be done without some reference to money. Nothing.
Yeah.
So we have a country that is basically run under the concept of the almighty dollar with no other real concept of any other issue. And the Olympics is to me the showcase of this type of greedy corporate, show this any way you can to make as much money as you can, because this is why we're doing it. And yes, they may have the right because they've spent the money, but is that in the interest of everybody in the world, or to even go without boycotting it? Is anybody here ever, because in some respects, I'm boycotting the Olympics right now, and I refuse to give NBC any of my time and ratings, and I'm sure all of you feel much the same way.
Well, Manny, what if there was a compelling event on? Are you telling me you wouldn't watch it?
Well, yeah, if we're live, of course I would.
Well, let's say, look at all through the years where you know, Billy Mills coming back and, you know, in the 800 and, you know, in the 76 Olympics. I mean,
Mills came back, by the way, in the 5,000-meter run.
Oh, that's right,
you know, that, by the way, was not live. We heard some inkling on it in the news. Because of the time switch, it wasn't shown until about 10 o'clock at night, but it wasn't much after.
But I'm just saying, I got to believe, if there was a compelling event, you'd watch it regardless of who was sponsoring it or anything else. It just doesn't, because like Sam said, because of the professional interest, people are competing all year round. It's not every 4 years anymore like it used to be. And I think that's a lot of the luster has been gone because it's not singular anymore. And I think
No, John. My point is, and take the Miracle on Ice as an example.
Yeah.
I got up on Saturday. I think Saturday was the game, was a hockey match against, well, it was Saturday was the Russians, and people don't realize we actually won the gold medal by beating the Swedes a day or so later. But anyway.
I think it was Finland.
I think it was Sweden. Well, anyway, make a long story short, I got up that morning. My son couldn't wait to get up. I mean, I could hardly move, and he was going, "Dad, Dad, Dad, the game is going out a little while." And so, you know, it was like an 8 o'clock tip-off, and anyone who knows me knows that 8 o'clock is not my favorite time in the morning. So I had to struggle to get out there, and by the time that game got going, it was clear to me something magical was going to happen, and it lit up my morning. I don't think I came down for 2 days after watching that. I had trouble sleeping. I don't know if any of the rest of you watched that moment in sports.
I agree with you.
And
I hate
it was
to
so,
admit it.
But the point is that none of those extraordinary events happen anymore.
And plus, Manny, you got to give a shout out to Al Michaels.
Oh yes, that was my comment earlier. Is do you believe in miracles? Not anymore, because I don't get to see them. And yes, that does bother me, John. I mean, that's the joy of the Olympics, right?
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It has nothing to do with commercialism. If there's a compelling event that people want to watch, they will. It's lacking now. That's my
point. No. My point is commercialism is driving them to have this odd type of display of events at odd times of the day and night to maximize what they think would be ratings from people who are not necessarily
because it's a world stage now. Yeah,
but no. They're catering to an audience that are basically cannot afford cable, and the main purpose they're delaying this is, of course, to allow them to get the maximum number of people who can't afford to see it in a different atmosphere. Excuse me, that's really the issue.
But many people who can't afford cable could go to one of their friends' house and watch it.
True, and that's the point of all this.
John, you're not invited.
What if I bring the kippers?
Oh, if you bring kippers, that's okay.
No, you don't want to have to feed him, by the way, Simon. Let me warn you, I fed him enough, and he can really pack it away, so you got to be careful about that.
Okay. Now, my problem is a larger problem, shall we say. I look at NBC.
Hey, Simon, real quick, there's medication for your problem. Go ahead.
Right. But I look at NBC, and I realize that, you know, it's a bastard child, you know, owned 51% by Comcast and 49% by GE. And
no, it's Vivendi, not Comcast. Vivendi is a French company. Comcast is owned by Sumner Redstone and is a completely different company.
Okay. Well, excuse me. My data was wrong. Either way, I still have this issue. When go up the pipeline, you know, to who owns it, and then you come back down and you look at the other things that they own, you go, well, how the hell can you produce a sports program or a news program that isn't biased?
John, is that one of your arguments?
I don't mind bias. My favorite baseball announcer of all time was Harry Carey. So, Manny, what can I say? I like a homer.
And I like Harry
and Chick Hearn was a homer, too. I love him, but you got to admit that. And you also failed to mention that he did a great job on Bowling for Dollars.
Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite shows, but the average American's never heard of Bowling for Dollars, and I agree with that. I love the show. It just brought me to tears laughing when it was on. I really think that when you look at, and coming back to Chick Hearn also railed on this subject because it bothered him, because he, from time to time, did a lot of the Olympic pre-up things. There were times when Chick Hearn, unknown to most people, worked within the national network scenario, and he actually called football games for a number of years on the network until he was given an ultimatum and he stayed with the Lakers. So anyway, getting off of that, let's get back to the topic. This is about a single person making a decision about a national event for what we all believe are the wrong reasons. Is that basically where we're going? Or do you really think that the decisions made by them are for the right reasons?
To me, I think their goal should be not only to provide quality entertainment, but also that they're there to make a profit. You got to balance it. What percentage it is, I don't know, but I'm not going to put a program on to lose money. It's just not going to happen. You won't survive in business. It's easy to be critical, but that's the bottom line. But you also want to provide quality to generate revenue as well. You got to get the people to watch it.
Did you ever level any of these complaints against ABC during their long reign over this?
I loved ABC. I mean, to be honest, I remember like Monday Night Football. I watched the game more because of the announcers than who was playing.
Right. But the point is that they did a better job of preserving.
I agree. Yeah, you're right. And like, you know, Jim McKay was mentioned earlier, and Bud Wilkinson, and you know whoever else was doing it back then. Yeah, of course. I thought they were superior, but Al Michaels is tremendous.
Uh-huh. I agree. So. I agree. And we've left out Peter here. Peter, you want to weigh in on this?
You know, I just enjoyed all the memories of all the Olympic moments and sports moments that, that you guys were talking about, and I was reliving all of them in my mind. You know, I don't know what can be done about the corporate plague that infects everything. It's always going to be driven by the almighty dollar, and I just don't see any way of getting around it. As we were talking about this subject, as we were talking about the substance abuse subject and controlled substances, it occurred to me that we might see an image of the Olympics 30 or 40 years from now where, you know, athletes are competing and pharmaceutical companies are basically offering ads saying, you know, we helped develop so-and-so's body, you know, we created this drug for this athlete, you know, Pharmatech or, you know, some company in some foreign place. And, you know, I can see a future like that where some athlete wins the decathlon and afterwards, you know, it's open knowledge that he was given substances or promoted by some Pharmatech company that created some, you know, synthetic hormone, steroid, HGH type thing. It wouldn't surprise me at all if that's what the future of competition is. It's a combination of professionalism and, you know, we call it doping, but in the future it may be called enhancements, and all of it corporate sponsored and everything being driven by the almighty dollar. And I guess that sounds very bleak, but that sure seems like where we're going.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute, sir. Before we go, wait a minute, Simon. Much like ESPN, I have to break in. I have to send you to Sports Central for this bulletin. 3 minutes ago, defending champion and world record holder Usain Bolt of Jamaica won the 100 meters at the London Olympics, setting an Olympic record of 9.63 seconds. So does that mean any of you really are dying to see that that race now that you know that he won it?
No, but...
I don't watch any Olympic event that takes less than 10 seconds to finish, so that takes it off my list.
Peter, I should forewarn you that next week, Manny and I have been cooking up a little bit of a special program, and I do hope that you remember what you said.
Yes,
I don't watch any Olympic event that doesn't take at least 10 seconds. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, Simon's talking about some time ago, Ash and I started writing articles about sugar. We got Simon all fired up on this subject about the difference between sugars that are basically refined and then high fructose corn syrup and other things that go into Coca-Cola. For example, Coke and all the various soft drinks, some of them have as much as 4 ounces of high fructose corn syrup. So along the way, Simon got into somewhat of what I would describe a love-hate relationship with Andrea Walker, who is the head of the Corn Refiners Association. And apparently our long-running feud with her, of which, frankly, Simon sliced and diced her in a number of articles, has become such a forefront of the lawyers who prevailed in a action recently in L.A. in early stages, all their demurs were overturned by the sugar companies, or should say the artificial sugar companies, who are claiming that corn sugar and real sugar are the same thing, have asked to be interviewed on the show. So we're going to interview them in a show that none of you probably would really want to participate in. And yet there's some humor. We talk about what to do in this corporate world. So far, Ash and I have been successful with Simon's help to get a number of companies to remove that from their drinks. I think we've contributed to Mayor Bloomberg's attack upon sugar products in New York City and a number of other places. So we can change things, and that's what prompts Simon to have this little giggle behind the back, because if there's anything Simon enjoys is getting under the skin of the Corn Refiners Association, right, Simon?
Oh, I just love it. You know, emails are flying, and I know that they cannot possibly say no. It, you know, I've got them in a no-win situation. To talk to me is disaster. To not, but to not talk to me is even bigger disaster. I love it when a plane comes together.
Yeah, what he likes is a car wreck, and unfortunately for those people, this is really a car wreck. But anyway, that's what prompted the comment, and we're all sort of chuckling about it. John's listened to this battle from time to time over lunch that we've had, and of course John favors anything that will fit in a Taco Bell wrapper, so he's
right.
Not all concerned with this.
Manny, if
I got to break
John
in like
food,
you
I
did,
eat.
Manny.
You what?
Someone said, so I just got a text message from somebody who said, while Bolt was winning the gold, NBC was showing a Lorax commercial. That kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, what's the matter, Heidi? What's on? You know, because we can harken back.
Oh, the Heidi.
Heidi.
Oh,
is.
Yeah, my dad used to tell me about that.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. And I was on the West Coast, so I was watching the game. They didn't go back. You know, people in New York are the ones who missed the game because they decided it was more important for the children of America to see Heidi than their parents, their fathers, to see the end of the Jets game against the Raiders. And what happens is they were down by, 7 or 8 points, and the Raiders, through a pass interception and a touchdown throw, came back and scored 2 touchdowns in less than a minute to upset the Jets because NBC thought that, well, the Jets were ahead, so let's not worry about it. So that's where the Heidi comment comes from. And I want to tell you, it was one of the funniest moments I can ever remember. Grown men crying because they couldn't see the end of the Jets game. But so they didn't do well with that criticism. They didn't even learn from their own criticisms, right?
Yep. Right.
Okay.
But really, how do you not, do they, have they picked, you guys might know better who've been watching the Olympics, have they shown anything live?
Only the announcers.
So, okay, so not everything's been on tape delay, they've been consistent with that.
Well,
I don't know
no,
for sure. I don't
no,
know if they probably
No,
have.
No, no. And NBC in a statement a couple of days ago are claiming that one third of all events have been shown live.
I don't believe that, because wouldn't you show the 100 meter, what is it, 100 meters? That would be something you'd show live, right, for the gold medal?
Oh,
I would assume so if you were the producer.
Well, you know why they're not showing it live? Because they want to hold it back and show it during prime time.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. And yet, the other side of the coin is claiming that NBC are doing well with this tape delay idea.
Well, but wait a minute. Let's go to the industry guy here. They have published, Simon, some artificial, surveys, or at least the results of it, without bothering to provide any proof that they're accurate, that supposedly people who see the results actually watch more of the events later on. So, as my wife pointed out, they probably surveyed 9 people in the office. But that's one of the problems. As we point out in our books, most surveys you read, particularly from drug companies, are false. All the abstracts and things you read or hear on the evening news are written by PR agents, not the doctors. And frequently Ash and I read the surveys and then find out they have nothing to do with what's being said. Well, I look at these readings very closely because I am in the industry, and I vote for Emmys and all the rest of that stuff. So I need to watch it because it's a frequent topic of conversation amongst friends and clients. And I want to tell you, every one of us thinks this is some kind of bogus, unsourced, type of report that they are not going to ever release the facts on how it was done, nor will we see the results. And that's the problem in America. If you can't prove something, then create a phony test to show that it's right.
Hey, Manny, let me say something real quick for the benefits of tape delay. I listen to this show several times afterwards because many of you make insightful comments that takes me a few times to grasp. And adversarially, whenever Simon's voice comes up, I turn up the dial. I advance it. So it's not always a bad thing. Remember that.
Well, can I bring up, Peter brought up a point back in regards to, you know, if we let anything go, they'd have doping, you know, incredible doping, you know, this body brought to you by, you know, Bear Aspen or whatever. But isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, again, I saw this online, wasn't there a sprinter who was an amputee with aluminum, you know, legs?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
From South Africa.
His name's Pistorius. And he's a joke. And the reason I say he's a joke is he's been running for a long period of time. And the truth is that he really is so marginal, he had to get a waiver from the Olympic Committee to perform because his times did not meet the minimum requirements to make the Olympics. So they've basically made a very big deal about him, but he really doesn't even belong there, and he didn't earn a place there. So no one ever mentions that because I've seen two of their little bits about, oh, isn't this wonderful? He's doing so much for running. And then the other day NBC ran a whole thing about how because he had these limbs that maybe he will break all these world records and change the sport when the guy can't even friggin' qualify, for God's sake.
But someday somebody will. But not a precedent's been set, right?
Well, I don't know if a precedent. The only precedent that's been set is he was good PR and they couldn't turn down the opportunity, you know, for the public relations. If you want to consider that an opportunity, then yes. But
No. I agree with that. I agree with you. I did not know about his times or how good of an athlete he is or how good of an athlete he isn't. But now that they've allowed somebody with special needs to come into play, won't someone now, let's say someone is a really good athlete and has special needs, arms or legs or both, but is really, really good, won't they be able to make the argument or, hey, you let this guy in, my time's even better than him, I've been winning races, and you have to let me in.
Well, I don't have a problem with him being in. Please,
but what if someone's really good is what I guess I'm trying to look down the road with technology getting better, you know, people are bigger and stronger, you know, this and that, and with the right coaching and technology, and someone, you know, you know, with artificial limbs and incredible, could be really good, be bionic man, so to speak.
By the way, if he earns his way in, he deserves to play. I don't have a problem with that. John and I have this conversation from time to time. If people earn something, I don't care if they're green, purple, yellow, brown, they get to compete. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the issue here is that they're making a big deal about somebody who is not competitive because their whole reason for him being there is to create a story for literally NBC to pander on the air, like, oh, isn't this wonderful? When in reality, it's a non-story. That's
okay. I did not know about his how good of an athlete he was. I just saw it, and I was like, wow, this is going to lead to, you know, this could potentially lead to a, like I said, a bionic man, a woman type thing by doing it, or a cyborg, or whatever the heck you want to call it, but competing.
Hey, Peter, I was watching some of the Olympic coverage earlier this afternoon. It was actually the online, not very good coverage, by the way, because Flash crashes all the time, but it was high jump. I think that high jumpers could jump a lot higher with jetpacks on their backs.
I see where this is going to.
I'm not sure I dispute that. I'm not sure I can confirm it either, but okay. let's just take that as a guess. Let's say they could jump higher with jetpacks. So are jetpacks legal? I should talk like a lawyer. Will jetpacks be permissible in the high jump? And in the short term future, I can't see that happening. But it does raise a lot of interesting questions, which we probably don't have to confront now. But we live in a day and age when people can get, for instance, just to pick an example, hip replacements. You can get knee replacements. And I've had people who've had their knee replaced, and they tell me that their fixed knee actually feels better than their non-fixed knee, and that they wish that they had two fixed knees instead of just one. Now, I don't know how accurate that is for the population, but people say that. And, we live in a day and age when people, in addition to all these substances that now promote better performance, legitimate or illegitimate, I think we're going to have a tougher and tougher time distinguing between the two as the substances get better. But we now also have body parts that we can put onto people that we could never do before. And, it wouldn't surprise me if there are people in the future who this person from South Africa, if I remember correctly, he was born without legs. I at least that's what I understood. And they gave him these devices. But it wouldn't surprise me at some point in the future if somebody was able to improve on these devices so that you could actually run faster than people could with just their natural two legs. And I don't know how we're going to handle that situation, but it seems to me that's going to present itself in the next 1 to 2 decades. And I don't know how we're going to deal with it. Here in Manhattan Beach, sometimes I see people running on the Strand, and they run on the Strand in these things called, I think they call them kangaroos, or they call them bounders or something. And you've probably all seen them. They look like ski boots, but at the bottom of the ski boot, there's a couple, there are blades that are shaped basically like a horizontal cutout of a football. They're sort of in the same shape as a football. And they're thick, and they look like skis that have been bent together. And when you go down, they compress, and then they go boing, and they shoot back up. And I see people running on these things, and they're just bounding away. I guess they call it bounding. And, it seems to me they're running pretty fast. And, at some point they're going to, in my opinion, implement that technology for people who don't have feet for whatever reason, and presumably they may be able to run faster. Usain Bolt, one of the reasons that he's the fastest human alive is because he has an incredible leg span. Each stride that Usain Bolt takes, it seems to me from watching him race, is longer than an equivalent stride of a shorter racer. So even though each racer is pumping their legs at the same rate of speed, Usain Bolt covers more distance in the same frequency. At least that's my, observation. And if there are devices that allow people to do the same thing, then presumably people could become faster. And I don't know how we're going to deal with it. And I think there is some sort of precedent that's been set now, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it all pans out. I just don't know.
Sam, what do you view the future as?
I think eventually, as it gets, technology gets better, as Peter was just giving good lecture about and all that sort of stuff, I think either the sports are going to have to change to accommodate the size, strength, and speed of the athletes, such as maybe stretching, maybe raising the basketball hoop a couple, 2 feet, or widening the, widening the court in football, or maybe in baseball when they, putting the pitcher's mound up higher, or moving back the outfield fences, or there's lots of things they can do to accommodate the, as athletes get bigger, stronger, and whatnot. And I'm just, of course, I just talked about basketball, football, and baseball in America, but in other things. So that's definitely going to have to. I think you know, Peter brings up this great thing about the stride. I mean, maybe they're going to, you know, how do you, you know, guys get, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger, and they just dominate. I mean, just not even close anymore, and until you can find some other people, realizing that that's supposed to be, he's the best at it, he's the biggest, and until anybody else comes around, they're not going to knock him, you know, off his pedestal. At an Olympic-type sport. But I can see team sport changing, for the big reason being when you start seeing guys dunk the ball every 2 seconds, and I know, Manny, you're a big, big basketball fan, that gets boring to me watching a basketball game like that. You know, just get the ball, dunk it in. There's no more dribbling, you know, pick and roll, all sorts of stuff. There is some, but now it's all about get the ball to the hoop, you know, elbow everybody out of the way and dunk the ball in. And, you know, maybe they got to raise the basket or whatnot, make people better shooters and things of that nature. So,
funny, John Wooden always maintained that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a better basketball player because they banned dunking while he was at UCLA.
That's right. Yeah. And I could see that. You know, that made him with the great skyhook, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Personally, I saw him. We're contemporaries. I went to USC. I was a senior when he was a freshman. And I used to watch them play local, the Frosh team, because the freshmen weren't eligible. I once saw the Frosh team, talk about Nigeria, beat El Camino College 137-30. And I had trouble not enjoying it and laughing through the whole game. These poor guys were in junior college, were just getting executed. So I think this happens at every level. But I know I agree with you. The problem with all of this is that the minute you change anything, you change the records. One of the issues over the Hall of Fame in baseball is whether to admit athletes who took steroids, particularly Mark McGuire and you know, Bonds and the rest of them, and whether their use of steroids taints the records of the Babe Ruths and other people in this world. And that would be one of the problems of the Olympics. And I might add, include Michael Phelps in your list. You do realize Michael Phelps has a genetic difference than other humans. He has almost like webbed feet, which allows him to swim a lot faster. That's a big factor in his success.
So, I did not know that.
Yeah, and... it doesn't seem to be as big a deal as this Olympic as it was the previous ones. But, yeah, almost every great athlete has some advantage. Maybe their heart pumps a little longer, or they have some other thing that gives them that skill. And that's part of athletics, and that's what part of what differentiates people. And this is why John says, you know, everybody should be able to do whatever they're going to do, because nature makes everybody a little bit different, and everybody has a little different advantage because of that. Right, John?
I know my advantage comes from the mass intake of junk food.
Oh, there's no question about it. Now you can understand why his unique brain works the way it does, huh? You get a clue.
So that explains Larry, what was his name? Johnny Holmes, natural ability or nature?
Oh, yeah. You know, and yet sports are interesting. There was once a player named Johnny High who played for the, Phoenix Suns. And the only time he was playing, my son, who was in high school at the time and pretty bright, looked at him and go, "Dad, I swear this guy's doing cocaine." And sure enough, everybody started nicknaming him Johnny Gets High, and a year later determined he was the team drug dealer when they had that huge scandal in Phoenix. So during those years in the 80s, when so many NBA players were doing drugs, does that taint a lot of those results? Or because cocaine is deemed to really reduce people's skill, that it was okay for him to do it, not affect his anything he did? I mean, this is an eternal question you're going to ask. And every level, does aspirin improve performance, for example? Or it's okay to have a prescription steroid, but it's not okay to have one that's not legal. So those people who are taking prescription steroids and are approved by the team doctor, they have an advantage. What does that mean? John, you want to opine a little bit on that one?
Well, it really only becomes a matter of interest when a superstar player is involved, such as Lawrence Taylor, someone of that magnitude. But I will leave it in the hands of the Hall of Fame voters themselves, the former players. I know a lot of them aren't sympathetic to people using steroids, and I don't blame them. But like you say, where do you draw the line as far as banning substances? To me, if it enhances your performance, I don't think aspirin does. I mean, if you have a hangover, you're still coming down, and it's not enhancing your ability. But taking steroids, I mean, Barry Bonds increased his cap size by, what, 3?
It looks even more than that.
And guys, it becomes a joke.
Here's my always thing. You got these baseball, they knew, majority of them knew Bonds, Clemens, that we all know in baseball, McGuire, a lot of the Hispanic guys had great seasons 1 year and then died, you know, they just fell off the face of the earth.
Sammy
all
Sosa.
With their voice. Wouldn't you think more players would have taken them just to have the advantage to get a bigger contract, a free agency and whatnot? That's what I was shocked at, how many weren't taking steroids, it appears. That's my take on it.
Well, Brady Anderson hit 50 home runs one year. He only hit about 100 his whole career.
Right, and there's a lot of players who did that.
I know.
You had these one-hit wonders, as they said.
Look what happened to Gary Gaetti.
Oh, yeah?
Ken Caminiti, not
Ken
Gaetti.
Right.
Caminiti.
No, but I was just curious that even though there's only a handful that we know about, maybe there's a lot more, I was just shocked more didn't do it because they knew Mark, all of a sudden, you know, like Barry Bonds, you know, being from Youngstown, I remember when the Pirates were good. They're good this year. For 20 years, they've been bad. But when Barry Bonds was on the Pirates, he was skinny. He was a sleek center fielder who had speed and, you know, did not hit for power. And all of a sudden, he started taking steroids, and you look at him, as you said, and, you know, he's pounding the ball, you know, 70 home runs a year.
Yeah.
And
well,
I'm surprised other players didn't go, wow, me too.
Well, there was always rumors about it. He lived in my neighborhood. You know, John, he lived in Hidden Hills. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
And in fact, they tried to run him out because he put a lighted indoor batting or outdoor batting cage in, and you know how they are in
Well, you know why? Probably because I knew his agent, Dennis Gilbert, lived there.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was so much with Dennis. You know, I think it started when his dad played for the Angels. He just liked the area, and he came back. And according to him, I actually spoke to him once about a problem in Hidden Hills that nobody cared about him there, and he had total privacy, and that was why he moved there. But he lived there for some time, and I was involved with a matter with one of my friends, your former friends too, who had a problem with the government there, our little private government in Hidden Hills, and they wanted to ban something on a friend of mine's property, and we used it as an example, and he offered to actually testify, and I found to be an extremely nice guy as opposed to his reputation among others, because he has a reputation of being extraordinarily surly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gentlemen. Unfortunately, I'm looking at the clock, and we're getting out of time. So it's definitely the point in the program where we go around the table. Everyone gets their last say. John, let me start with you.
Thanks, Simon. I'd like to go off topic just a little bit and pay tribute to a man I admired who passed away last week, Gore Vidal, iconoclast, never shrunk from enraging the establishment of which he was a part. And even though I disagreed with him on most issues, he was always entertaining, enlightening, and insightful, and I learned a lot from him. And R.I.P. And thanks for having me on this week. It was entertaining as always.
And I'm in agreement with you. Gore Vidal was definitely a wonderful man. Peter, you've been relatively quiet today, but that's probably because the rest of the crowd has been beating you up or beating you out.
I just love listening to people's comments. I really enjoy listening to people's thoughts and points of view, and I take a lot out of it, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I know we spent the bulk of today talking about quote-unquote sports, but anytime we talk about any one thing. We're talking about something in a micro sense, but it tells us a lot about the macro issues too. And I think that, you know, talking about whatever plagues sports is also the same thing as talking about whatever plagues our world today and our economy today and our politics today, et cetera. And I just really enjoy it, and I'm grateful for everyone's thoughts and comments.
Sam?
I really enjoyed everything today. I mean, I thought there was a give and take with the amateur and versus the professionals at the Olympics. Learned a lot, and as always, Manny's history lessons are always enlightening and educating. And John and Peter and you, Simon, always bring in great things, too. And I'm just very grateful to spend my Sunday afternoon with my wife in New York City visiting our grandson and other children to have something that, just exciting to do. So thank you very much.
And Sam, you lie like a rug, but you know, that doesn't mean I don't like you. And Manny, you must have some parting thoughts for us.
Yeah, you know, Peter, you made me think that we're back to one of my topics for the show all the way through the election. It's an unholy trilogy: a corrupt Congress, a corrupt corporate America, and here we are with a typical example of corporate America's tentacles have just all pervaded society and grabbed hold of everything they can, including sports, because while they were taking over every other facet of the world in the last 30 years, they've now taken over sports. So I'm going to end this with a paraphrase to the great Chick Hearn, and those of us in Los Angeles will understand this one. This show's in the refrigerator. The door's closed, the lights are out, the eggs are cooling, the butter's getting hard, and the Jell-O's jiggling. It's in the refrigerator, guys.
Good one. My name is Simon Barrett, and I want to thank everyone for listening in today. We'll be back next Sunday, and we'll have a sweeter program. Till
sugar, sugar.
Right. Oh, I already have the soundbite.
But guys, tune in next week. Learn what's in those candy bars. Learn what's in your soft drink. Learn why corporate America is lying about the products. Learn why they're lying, claiming that all this junk in your food is the same as regular sugar grown out in the bush. It's not. They're poisoning you. Tune in next week, right, Simon?
Absolutely. In fact, that does give me some pause for thought. I'll leave with this.
Sugar. Oh, honey, honey. You are my